everyone, and welcome back to the Backwater Entrepreneur podcast and show. And this is another special coming to you on this podcast. I told you that this podcast is going to bring you short forms, me talking to you, me trying to change up your mindset, improve your business, but we're also going to have guests. And today is another special. I'm proud to introduce that I have another guest on the show, this time live, not on Skype. And my guest is Samantha Wolven.
Wolven.
Excellent. So from the UK, Samantha has been working as a consultant for businesses, changing up their business culture, improving communication between teams. And today we're going to talk a lot about those things, but the first things first. So Samantha, welcome to the show.
And thank you.
Can you tell us who is Samantha and what do you do?
Who am I? That is an ever-changing project, I think, of who am I. I am, yes, from the UK. I quit my life maybe 2 years ago and have a very nice new life where I move around the world a lot and I get to meet a lot of businesses and startups and people driving change in their workplace for a bigger and better universe in which they work.
Oh, fantastic. So many people quit their jobs, they quit smoking, and you say you quit your life. So how do you do that? How do you quit your life and move on to the next one?
I think it might be 50% stupidity and 50% bravery. What I did was the trigger moment was quitting my job. But actually what that meant was if I quit my job and I didn't want to get a new one, I had to probably quit my house that I was sharing with a friend. And that meant that I could no longer live in London because I didn't have a house. So that meant I quit my city. And if you've spent enough time in London, there slowly becomes no other place but London in the UK because it's this big bubble of a city. So that meant quitting the UK. So I quit my job, quit my town. I still have my friends, thank God. But yeah, very much quit the life I was leading in search for something very different.
So that's perfect because most people, in order to have a life-changing moment, they go through a phase like near-death experience and stuff like that. So it wasn't the deal with you in that sense. But what was the trigger? What was the initial thought about changing up everything from what you were in corporate, right? So
yes.
So you were doing a regular job, 9 to 5.
Yeah.
And what made you just wake up one day and move into, you know, consulting, entrepreneurship? And
It very much wasn't just waking up one day. It was, according to some friends, probably about 2 years overdue, if not longer. And the trigger point for me actually pulling the trigger was one of my friends and I took a train trip and she sat me down and had my undivided attention for 2 hours on a train and said, right, come on, Samantha, give me a date. I want a date and we're going to put a meeting in our diaries and that is the day that you are going to quit this stupid job. So we decided I had to logically think through when would be a sensible time to do this and all of this and how many weeks in my head did I need to prep for it. But at the very best, it had been probably 9 months worth of mental preparation. And I'd stepped out of one role into a better role, which had given me some more breathing space. But prior to that, actually, I had become really entrenched in a not so enjoyable for me, rather toxic workplace.
Mm-hmm.
That was no longer any good for me and didn't have space for me to be me. And actually, over the course of probably 18 months or so, I slowly extracted myself from that and made life changes and job changes that let me quit everything in one fell swoop.
And this is a kind of perfect continuation into what I'm going to ask you, because I wasn't going to ask you this, but now that you told me this, so I told you that to ask you something different. So basically in this podcast, we already talked about starting a new business, mm-hmm. or changing from full-time to, you know, your own business. So, and there is a lot of question between should you do a hard cut gut and just go into the unknown? Or should you first have a side hustle and then kind of build that up into an entrepreneurship or a self-sustained business before you quit your day job? Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts on that? So where were you in that?
I think if you have an ounce of common sense, then you try a side hustle and you see what that is and you try it out first. Uh-huh. I don't have an ounce of common sense.
Yeah.
I couldn't have done that. I was in such a bad kind of mental place, both mm-hmm. at work, and I no longer loved London. And if you don't love London, it's very busy. It's very noisy. There's lots going on and it can be incredibly overwhelming. So I was just lost in this city that I didn't want to be in anymore, in a job that I didn't want to be in anymore. So all of my energy was spent holding myself together, to be honest. I don't think I've told anyone this, but here you go. I did a lot of my mental image was of me, a shaped me, like me made out of marbles, mm-hmm. so hard little tiny balls and held together with a net. And actually I had a couple of holes in those nets due to various life and work things. So for a while, all I had to do was make sure none of the marbles mm-hmm. fell out. So I didn't have time or space or any energy to create a side hustle. Mm-hmm. I was too busy not falling apart.
To
create anything. I didn't have any energy to create. And kind of linking this through Simon Sinek, who does a lot on motivation and why. And I think I'm probably a stalker, so I warn you, Simon. But his thing about toxic workplaces and actually the physiology that happens in your body when you are under daily stress mm-hmm. means that you cannot see the silver lining. You can no longer physically see the good stuff. And you find it more and more and more difficult to see any benefits at all. Mm-hmm. And I had found myself in that place. So I was just spiraling deeper and deeper and deeper with it getting darker and darker. Mm-hmm. So the ability to be creative or innovate or have the confidence to go out and pitch myself to somebody else, I didn't have it. And I needed that complete break. I needed that quote unquote quitting my life. And I took several months to decompress from mm-hmm. where I was. I needed a recovery period, mm-hmm. Which involved lots of long walks along the beach, which was lovely. It involved living my worst case scenario, which is a different thing entirely, but choosing that, which was quite freeing. I just needed some headspace. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, fantastic. And from what I gathered, so from your now business, so the consulting, mm-hmm. you actually help teams and people within companies not go through the through the things that you went through, or to go and see the silver lining, as you say. So you say on your website, so you translate complex ideas mm-hmm. simply and powerfully and get people talking and working better together. How do you do that?
I do that because an external person is always better than an internal person. Mm-hmm. And that is not because they rarely know more or have better ideas. Sorry, all consultants out there, I'm debunking this myth. But we don't generally have better ideas or know more. We might have more variety of experience and know that this is a pattern and not a one-off in this workplace. Mm-hmm. But actually what senior management often needs is they need to save face. And if they are saving face by asking and listening to somebody who's being paid a lot of money and their external consultant, that's great because they're the expert in inverted commas. Whereas if your staff member who is below you and subordinate has a great idea, that takes a very strong leader and a very self-confident person to go, oh my God, that's a great idea. Let's do that. They've got a better idea than I do. I'm going to follow them. And it's often too difficult a thing.
It's a similar things happens in families or and tight communities that you need actually a third person to come in and say exactly what somebody's been saying mm-hmm. in order for somebody to say, yeah, that's exactly right. So, but I've been saying that for you know, years. No, you're too close. Yeah. Basically, because the people who are closest, even within companies, are, you know, you know too much. You see that from a different angle. We need somebody external to say the exact same thing, and then we're going to listen to it.
And if I am to sell myself in as a consultant, hang on a minute, I just screwed myself there. Actually, what I do is come in and I empower the person who's had those great ideas. I believe that change can only happen from within. So mm-hmm. I don't want to come in and apply this model that I've used time and time again. I might come in and go, actually, we've got this game that I've played time and time again. It'll get us thinking. But the change has to come from the people who are going to deliver the change. It has to come from the people who will do this day in, day out, who the people who speak to your customers day in, day out. They know what problems they have. They know a realistic solution. And what I help them do is go to a slightly stupid solution because that's the fun, creative stuff. And once we've gone big, we can bring it back down again to something that will work today and something that will be a bit bigger tomorrow and a bit bigger the day after. But I come in and I get people talking. Mm-hmm. And for some unknown reason, I come in and people start talking to me and they will tell me all of their life challenges. I often refer to it as business therapy and relationship counseling at work, because the reason that people are too close, the reason that it's very similar to families and marriages and all of your relationships, is that it's a relationship and there's history and there's emotion wrapped up and you're too close and you've had too much hurt. So actually what I come in and say, it's okay to have had that hurt. I'll listen to it. Okay, now we're going to, that's got to put aside. How do we stop you from hurting again? Mm-hmm. How do we move forward? And okay, how do we create a safe space in which you can have the stupid ideas because they're hilarious? And what's better than having laughter at work? Okay, then we can be productive. Brilliant. Let's get moving.
Mm-hmm. And how often do those business therapies involve stuff that's related to business intertwined with personal stuff?
All the time.
So how much is personal stuff so getting in the way of business?
One of a previous lady I have worked with was always banging on about the fact that believe in good intent. So actually, nobody wakes up in the morning wanting to do a bad job. They want to be a good mother. They want to be a good husband. They want to be a good customer satisfaction employee. They want to be a good bin cleaner. They want to be a great CEO. They wake up wanting to be a good version of themselves. But at some point, something gets in the way. Mm-hmm. And they turn into a not so good version of themselves. Or they take a tangent and they allow their anger to get in the way, or they allow something else to get in the way. So it's always that person getting in the way of doing the thing they really want to do. And then that kind of thing that gets in, that obstacle, is helped by poor processes, which is helped by a toxic culture, which is helped by real kind of legacy relationships that no longer exist. But actually, well, marketing always says this, and then strategy team says this, and then, and governance. Well, governance never let us do anything, and they always send us back our reports. I'm like, well, okay. And I normally start a session with kind of 10 minutes of complaining and then stop. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get everything out so I can hear what's going on. And the first step in any change of culture is to know how you got to where you've got to. And what's really going on? And then once you start to understand that, you can say, well, okay, well, I'm in place A. Where's point B? Okay, great. And actually, where's point C? Okay, and mm-hmm. after that, there's going to be point D. So where it's behavior change is an ongoing and long-term thing. Anyone who says they can come and do it in 6 months is a miracle worker. or lying. She says.
So I'm going to stick to the point between personal and business. Oh, yeah. So I recently had the opportunity to undergo through some sort of similar training with a consultancy. And there is a big question where business consultants such as yourselves have to draw a line between becoming only business consultants or, family therapy. Yeah. Where is the line that you draw in the sense of, okay, this is a personal problem that you need to address for somebody that you're coaching, where, my expertise is, here's the limit. Yeah. From this point, you need to actually go to a therapist.
I think that varies for everybody. I would never like to, I don't do therapy. I'm not qualified to be a therapist or a counselor or to lead through marriage counseling. But actually often the whole purpose of coaching, and there's a fine line between coaching and consultancy, and the purists out there will be shouting at me to say there's not a fine line, it's a very firm line. But actually, if I'm there and treating the person in front of me, if they just need to talk, sometimes I need to give them an hour of talking and they will talk themselves to feel much better about life. And if it's a real relationship problem, they want to leave their husband, their child is annoying the shit out of them. How else does this work? They're really unhappy in their job. What my aim is to get them to a point where they understand they have a choice. And actually, that's much more empowering. Mm-hmm. So one lady I spoke with I was doing some coaching with her, and her team had been put through redundancy about four times in the last 18 months or something. And she is intelligent and empowered and strong and feels like she should be this ambitious woman. So should be really annoyed that they've put her through this situation so many times. It's a definite vote of we don't care about you, which it is. And it's a really ineffective way of doing anything. But she was so wrapped up in herself that she should be wanting more from her work and more from this. But actually what we spoke about was kind of working out what was important in her life. Mm-hmm. And what was important in her life is her husband and her family. What's important in her life is her faith and her church and the community that surrounds that. And actually what this job allows her to do was to work 4 days a week, one day of which she always worked at home. She could be there for pick up and drop off at school, and she could be there for her children, and she got paid a decent salary for it. And actually her life was about her family, her church, her community, her friends, her wonderful house and fabulous Instagram kind of profile. And her job just she quite liked. She liked what she was doing in her job. Yeah. She liked her team. She liked the aim of the team. If they happened to make her redundant in another 12 months, then she could probably find another thing that was quite similar.
Yeah.
And she stopped worrying about should be ambitious and should be this, because this job currently allowed her this life and that was her priority.
Yeah.
Maybe that will change once the kids leave home. Maybe she'll want to put more of herself into her job, at which point she'll have another choice.
Yeah.
But just understanding the fact that understanding where she was and the choice she had about her life and the choice she was actively making, because she was really annoyed at herself that she hadn't been job hunting. She's like, I should have been job hunting for at least 6 months because they told me this a million months ago and they did this and they did that and they did the other. I'm like, why? It pays you really well for 4 days a week, one of which is working from home, which is always questionable. It gives you the freedom. It gives you the lifestyle. It gives you a decent money.
Yeah.
If you're happy, you're happy. Allow yourself to be happy. And the relief just fell off her.
And basically in business, we need to talk and communicate with our teams and employees. Mm-hmm. And go through the personal as well as the business, because especially in entrepreneurship, business and personal yeah. are very intertwined, because entrepreneurship is milking everybody dry. So it is your life, yeah. whether it's just your own as well as your employees. If you're working for an entrepreneur, you're usually giving a little bit of extra, not just yeah. the big corporate life. So you work with both big corporate companies as well as startups. So focusing on the smaller entrepreneurs mm-hmm. and the startups. So starting and growing a company, what are some of the biggest challenges people are coming across in your experience?
I think trying to do it all is a big thing for entrepreneurs. Again, it comes back down to this question, why? Why have you chosen this lifestyle? Why have you chosen the particular company you're trying to build or the idea you're going for? But also understanding in yourself what stage you're at. So actually in the lifestyle, you get different types of entrepreneur. So you get somebody who is the ideas person, brilliant. And they constantly throw out ideas. But entrepreneur, I got this last week, so I'm going to totally steal it, is the person who does. Also, or one who acts is the meaning of entrepreneur. Entrepreneurship is not one who has ideas. Mm-hmm. It's one who acts on an idea. So you might have 50 ideas a day. That doesn't make you an entrepreneur. An entrepreneur comes in and says, that's a great idea. Let's do something with it. And they'll either go and do it by themselves or they'll bring you with them if you're interested. And then you get the entrepreneur who goes from idea to a thing. And that might not be the same entrepreneur, the same person who can take it from being a baby thing to an actual business. Mm-hmm. And then you get a first round of investment. And if you go with investment, you get first amount of success. Mm-hmm. And then actually maybe it's not the same person who can take it from first success to 20th success. And then you've got a slightly bigger company. And actually the person who really likes the adrenaline risk, high ideas and starter phase kind of gets a bit bored by the time it becomes a company. Mm-hmm. And you're going to do the same thing and you've got yourself a job. If you do your startup correctly, you have created a job, mm-hmm. which is a very different mindset to the person who was happy taking all the risks and jumping through hoops and bootstrapping and all of that. So actually, that's probably a different person. And the true unicorns out there are the entrepreneurs who can recreate themselves at every stage. And you might start as the tech guy, and then you become the salesperson, and then you become kind of the first chief exec. But then you realize that actually the chief exec needs to know about everything, and you're a specialist. So maybe you then become head of innovation, or you become like the real tech person. Mm-hmm. Or you can change and change and change. So the people who started at the start and finish at these multi-billion pound companies are few and far between. So actually, understanding who you are as an entrepreneur and what you're interested in and the choice that gives you, you go, okay, I like starting companies. Okay, so I'm going to take it from naught to £500,000. Okay, but then I'm done. And then I get to start again.
And then we're talking about serial entrepreneurs.
And then you're a serial entrepreneur. Brilliant. But then you need a guy or a girl to come in at the £500,000 mark. You're like, okay, well, that's a different type of creation process. So you go from like this initial team, which is really cool and agile and lean and doing a little bit of everything, mm-hmm. and you need to turn it into a company. Mm-hmm. You're like, right, okay. So you need to have some processes, and you need to have some structure, and you need to understand kind of your finance processes, and you need to have somebody who's really good at like people, and people who's really good at systems, and people who's really good at measuring stuff. You're like, okay, well, they're different people to the people you started with, and some will come with you, and some it's time for them to do something new. And how do you help them do something new? Because they're going to be a massive fan of you doing this. And if you help them realize that it's now time for them to make a choice, they might choose to stay or they might choose to go. But either way, they're going to be much happier knowing that they've made a choice rather than accidentally finding themselves here. And then again, if you go from £500,000 to £5 million, it's a different size company. Mm-hmm. Are you talking about 100 employees or 1,000 employees? 1,000 employees is huge. What are you doing with that? Okay, great. But it's a different type of person. So actually talking to the entrepreneurs and coming back to your question rather than the tangent that I've taken us on again, what I find is a slight panic of where they come to me and where I add the most impact is when the entrepreneur's eyes have glazed over slightly in panic phase of either we don't have enough money because we're bootstrapping everything, or I know it's time to let something go or hire somebody, but that's terrifying. It's like having your baby and then giving it to the babysitter. How do you know if the babysitter is going to feed it correctly or change its nappy correctly or do all of these sorts of things? It's a terrifying moment. And it's much easier just to hold on to it yourself, apart from the fact that your head's about to explode.
So you paint a very nice picture of entrepreneurship. So I recognize myself through a lot of things that you're saying. So before I go into the tangent thing that added, and we're going off script totally. Yep. You know, I prepared some questions, but you know, these are such good points that I need to touch on them. But before, one question. So what are entrepreneurs mostly neglecting in developing their business?
Themselves, I think.
In what way? So you mean in a personal way or in a business way? Or what? Or let me divide the question. So what part, if we're talking about themselves, so we know that entrepreneurs sacrifice so much because they want to build something and it's mostly personal. Mm-hmm. So, but what part of business do they neglect throughout their development?
I think it can often be, for me, and I'm totally putting my own personal spin on this, but the boring side of processes and procedures. Mm-hmm. And actually for the ideas stage, excited setup entrepreneur, the concept of putting in a sales funnel and a script for your customer service employees, it's just like, why don't... there's a bit of a belief of, well, if I just hire a good enough person, they don't need a process.
Yeah.
Which could be true if you find the best person ever.
And he doesn't leave.
And they don't leave, which means you're not doing your job properly. Yep. My biggest thing is you should always be trying to get people to outgrow your business, because businesses grow slower than people have the ability to grow. Again, tangent. But I think the best way of management and leadership is to help them grow, a person grow and grow and grow. And if they outgrow where you have space for them, if you don't have space somewhere else in the company, then help them go somewhere else, ideally to your competitor, to go, great, let's spend 2 or 3 years here, get all of their knowledge and come back. Mm-hmm. So how do you create this cyclical nature of people coming and working with you, going out, getting more knowledge, coming back and working with you, going out, getting more knowledge, and how do you do that? But that's not a very common approach at all. But again, that's a tangent. So I think people forget, I think people get bored by processes, which means you need to find somebody who gets excited by processes. Mm-hmm. And that there are those people out there, I am not one of them, but I am so excited when I meet somebody who likes helping me turn my approach into a model. Mm-hmm. This is my model that I work with. I'm like, oh yeah, I do have models. Great. I didn't know. I just play games. In my workshops, I play games and I try and test out the games. And then somebody's called them models. And I'm like, oh, that sounds fancy. Oh, I've got models. Yeah. How exciting.
Now I can charge more.
Now I can charge more. Brilliant. And actually what I'm going to do is get you to play a game with me. So I think business-wise, it's understanding the importance of creating rules and regulations to give people a structure and a safety net in which to work, because the majority of people are more risk adverse than entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. which is why they're coming to work for an entrepreneur and not do their own thing. So actually, how do you give them that comfort zone? And you can encourage them to break the comfort zone and to break the rules or to bend them ever so slightly. But then they need to know where they are. If they don't have any boundaries, then it's all a bit free fall. Mm. And so it all goes a bit chaotic, which makes most people feel unsafe.
And in both, and this is an excellent both answers to both questions, but in both cases, you touched on a point which you're leading up my question to, is in all of that, you're talking about building teams, teams who are excited about working for you as an entrepreneur, promoting your idea as an entrepreneur and excited about working at your company for your idea, for the success of that company. Now, that's not an easy thing to do to motivate people and create real teams, not just employees, mindless drones in that sense, which are working just because they need a job and I'm doing this because I don't have anything else and I need to do a copy of this. But I'm, or in some cases, he's not recognizing my full potential, my excellence. And there is a big difference between taking on a specialist in some case and already an expert in copywriting, marketing, whatever, or somebody who has potential to learn something, but you're taking on a rookie and growing with the company, growing into the team, who has a little bit bigger potential of being satisfied within the team. So how do you actually screen for people who you can trust with your idea, who you can motivate enough that I need somebody to dig with me? I'm an entrepreneur. I did everything so by myself up to now. I need one person. I cannot hire five people. But I need then one, then in 2 months, another person. But I need somebody to dig with me. I don't have just processor. I don't want an assistant. I want a team member.
Yeah. I think you need to be very clear. This comes back to Simon Sinek, but you need to be very clear on why you're doing this. What is the benefits? What is the pain point that you're speaking to? Why the hell are you doing this? And why even more should anyone else care? And whether that's looking at getting investment, whether that's looking at increasing your customer base, whether that's looking at motivating your team, if you don't know why the fuck you're doing something, nobody else is going to know, are they? If you can't communicate that and communicate it in terms of, well, this was my problem, this is my story that I have experienced, whether it's your mum or your dad or your brother or your ex-wife's dog or whatever, whoever had the problem that made you sit up and go, oh my God, this is it. If you can't talk about that, then it's really difficult to communicate. You can talk about features, but how boring is that? I was talking with some startup students the other day, and they were talking about one of the more successful startups in Serbia. And they have created their first product and had quite a lot of success. And they're now looking at creating their second product. And I was like, well, why do they want to create their second product? And they're like, well, they need to diversify their revenue stream. I'm like, how fucking boring is that? They need to diversify their revenue stream.
That's a big word for an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
So for kids, you know, we're pumped doing this. We need to diversify our revenue stream.
Well, that's not interesting or inspiring or anything. Yes, that's maybe factually correct, but why? The reason you created your first product was because you had nothing. So let's go and create that. That's fun. What's your next version of that? And the thing that is blocking them and their personal and business thing, I would imagine, having not spoken to them, is the fear of failure. So they've had this brilliant success, but now anything less than this success is going to be deemed a failure. I cannot remember the names at all, but there was an example of two very famous bands who changed one person within their band. I'm going to have to look this up later. But I think it's the guy that changed out of the Beatles and the guy that changed out of something like Metallica. So two huge bands, and I should really know the names and I don't. But the guy who left the Beatles went on and was like, okay, I want a really nice family and I want a really nice kind of life. And this is great. And this is my success measure is, okay, how happy am I? How satisfied am I? Went on, very happy for his mates in the band, which may or may not have been the Beatles. Just putting that caveat out there. Something as big as them. The other guy was kicked out of the band, went, oh my God, I am going to be more successful than you. went on, created another band who had phenomenal international success, but was never quite as successful as the band that started 5 or 6 years before him. So he was never quite happy, never quite satisfied. And his reason for doing it was, I want to beat the hell out of you, which is not a good enough reason.
Yeah. And you mentioned Simon Sinek quite a few times. And
I love
we're,
him. Yeah,
we're going to link. I know exactly the speech. Yeah. It's a TEDx speech or a TED speech.
It's not a TEDx speech.
It's a TED speech.
It's a thing that we now call a TED speech that's not on a TED platform. There are other TED platforms out there. Who knew? I think it's 99 up.
99 up.
I think that's a thing.
I know that I have the link in my YouTube, and especially it's you know your why of the why of the company. Yeah. And the circles, and I'm gonna link that below this podcast so all of the audience can check it out. I'm also gonna. Basically, he talks about knowing the why, like the difference between you selling, you know, mobile phones, mm-hmm. and Apple company.
Yeah.
We want to improve the way you see the world.
Yeah.
And we just happen to sell iPhones, which help you improve the see the world. I also recently listened to a podcast from Andy Frisella, also talked about you needing to have the best product, the very best service that you are selling, focusing on that, and then everybody will start talking about you instead of asking people, oh, can you, you know, check out my stuff and I'm going to give you free t-shirts and check out my, you know, a sample of my product or service so I can get you somehow in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in order to have the best of something, so we're fully dedicated to creating, for example, the best t-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
And they are really the best t-shirts. And for somebody who's listening, we're maybe talking to a new entrepreneur, not just the ones already producing t-shirts and having a brand, but I want to produce t-shirts. I want to focus on quality instead of quantity. And this is kind of the best thing. I still need my first customers.
Yeah.
So I still maybe need to give one t-shirt away, mm-hmm. instead of 40 million. But before focusing on that why and getting the first income and the beginnings of a business, how do you diversify between, you know, I need to sell shit,
mm-hmm.
between I need to sell quality shit so people will come to me instead of me having to do any kind of marketing?
I think my question to that entrepreneur would be, why is it, what makes it the best t-shirt? Is it fit? Is it logo? Is it color? Is it material? Is it ethical? What makes it the best, and for whom is that the best? I'm going to have a very different opinion on the best t-shirt to you're going to have a different opinion on the best t-shirt. And is the person trying to sell to both of us, at which point you're going to need to talk about different best things,
mm-hmm.
or is he actually going to talk to me? And therefore he's going to have thought about the fact that I'm a woman. I have breasts. A t-shirt is going to be very different for that. A t-shirt for women needs to be much more fitted because that's the style. And actually, how do you do that? And how do you do these different things? And does the neck hole need to be different? Is it a V-neck? Is it a circle neck? Is it what? How does it work? Do you want Diamante on it? Like, what type of woman are you then trying to sell mm-hmm. it to? So actually, if you want to focus on the best product, I think where a lot of entrepreneurs spiral and get stuck,
mm-hmm.
is it can always be better. Your best t-shirt can always be a little bit better tomorrow. So you should probably wait until tomorrow and then you can sell your best t-shirt tomorrow. But actually tomorrow will never come. So how do you make sure that you have got a good enough t-shirt? So one that isn't going to shrink in the wash, one that isn't going to fade in the first 6 months, one that's actually going to fit and people are going to know what size they should pick up. Is it a small, medium or large? Which means nothing to anybody, let alone you go into women's sizes. Is it a size 8, a size 0, a size 16, a size 22? Which means very different things in very different shops. Doesn't mean anything. How are you going to help your customer to buy the thing as quickly and easily as possible?
Okay, that's a valid point. I want to maybe take another example. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Nike.
Yeah.
They don't sell shoes. Okay. They sell a mindset, you know, just run, yeah. you know, do the thing, be free, and they sell shoes. And people don't buy shoes because the advertisements are not made for shoes.
Yeah.
But they are already a brand.
Yeah.
They, you know, Apple has a totally different mindset. Instead of, you know, promoting the phone itself, I mean, they promote the phone itself yeah. on every like conference. This is the best thing we ever did. Yeah. You know, last year's model is shit.
Yeah.
You know, but they have an underlying so why of the company. So we are not doing this because of the phone. We are doing yeah. this because we want to change the world yeah. and see how you exchange things. So, but for somebody who is beginning mm-hmm. a business. Do you think it's already valid to say that I want to change the world with a t-shirt or whatever, or with a sneaker instead of saying something about the sneaker, saying just run? Or I should focus on the product itself or a service, whatever it is, until I start selling yeah. and then move on into the bigger why?
I think a very handy formula that I've looked at. See, I have models. I've got a formula.
Yeah, cool.
Mm, yeah. is looking at, so it's a rule of three. So one core value, mm-hmm. which for me is probably the last thing you get to. Because if I go big and shave it all down. So you get to the actual nugget, the golden nugget of something. So one core value of why your thing is good with three benefits. So what difference is it going to make to my life? So if it's a t-shirt, can I wear it three times without needing to wash it? Is it going to make me look hot? Is it, I don't know, going to set my hair off differently? I spend so much time thinking about t-shirts. I don't know. What's good about it? What are the benefits of wearing this, your t-shirt? And you don't say it, but it's intrinsically applied. What's the benefits of wearing your t-shirt over that of somebody else's?
Mm-hmm.
And then what stories do you have to demonstrate the benefits? So if you've got three benefits, do you have three stories to talk to each of those benefits?
Mm-hmm.
So actually all you need to do is essentially remember those three things of why your t-shirt is great and who might use your t-shirt because you've got three stories to back it up. And then once you've spoken about those benefits, you can then give your core why or your core value proposition or that one thing that means your t-shirt is great. And it doesn't need to be a marketing consultant to come in and help you brand it. It doesn't need to be something big and fancy, and you can change it. So test yeah. it. I think testing, everybody gets wrapped up in having the perfect, not only do you need the perfect product, but then you need the perfect way to sell it.
Yeah.
And actually more often than not, you are not your target audience. I am not my target audience because I'm already quite emotionally intelligent. I'm good with people. I like culture change. I'm talking to people who are less emotionally intelligent, who are probably technical experts and less people, and who struggle with culture change. So my audience is not me. So if I don't like my marketing strapline, it doesn't mean it's not good. It just means it's not talking to me. So you need to go and test it on the people you want it to talk to. And I think you can do a test, go out in the street.
Yep.
My friend who I did some work with has created a new food brand, and she's going to get a movement behind it. And she had her friend create 3 or 5 logos, took them to the street. She doesn't like any of them, to be honest, took them to the street and got 10 people, straw poll of 10 people, said, which one do you like? This one. All right. So that's one she's trying.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter that she doesn't like it. She doesn't hate it. I think if you hate it, don't do it. But you don't have to love it to test it. And especially at MVP stage, sorry, minimum viable product stage, test it and see and test it and see. The whole point is pivot, 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 pivot. And if you become a successful entrepreneur and if you go down the investment route, essentially every time you get investment, you need to throw your previous business plan out of the window, because the investors are going to have a different idea. They're probably going to want you to bring in somebody different to do something differently because they're now vested interest in there. And then you grow it again. So you get to the £500,000 mark. You're like, okay, your business plan goes out the window because you've got new people on the team. You get to the 5 million. Again, it's business plan out the window. Yeah. So you might have to change your logo, your strap line, your this. And the whole, everybody talks about pivots. So how many times are you pivoting? So you can't get too attached to the first idea. So get it out and test it. If you make awesome t-shirts, wear it. See if anybody tells you how much they like the t-shirt you're wearing.
Yeah. And you touched right on the points that I wanted to touch on.
Well,
in the podcast. And basically that's the core value and not being afraid to change even that. Mm-hmm. So to know your core value and then tell stories about it, but not being afraid to change it, because mm-hmm. having an idea, and selling an idea are two different things.
Yeah.
Having a product and knowing that somebody will buy that product doesn't have to be the same product. It doesn't, you know, you'll have to go through change. And it isn't a bad thing, and it isn't a bad thing to do that in mid process. So stuff like that. So cool. So we already talked about talking to your audience, touching point on the core values and change, and basically analyzing the audience by asking questions. So always ask questions about your product. So I want to ask you one final question, which I found on your website.
How exciting.
Yeah. What is a leadership revolution?
Well, I'm so glad you asked that. For me, a leadership revolution comes back to being you. And it comes back to this idea of choice. And actually, the more you are within work and life and business and how you spend your time, the clearer, the more informed decisions you can make. So actually, a leadership revolution is coming in and being you at work, which is not how our leaders have been taught to behave. So actually, we're at the cusp of a leadership revolution now, because managers who have been managing for 20 years were taught to have a very different face at work. So you had your work persona and you had your private life persona, and never the twain shall meet. Whereas now we're available 24/7. Holidays are spent checking your emails just in case. There is constant connectivity. There is no more work-life balance. Though mm-hmm. I would argue that there never was a work-life balance, because nobody ever had too much life on the scale. Right? It's just how much time are you spending your energy doing this one thing versus this other thing? So the idea of a leadership revolution is coming in and showing up and being you, which involves being vulnerable. It involves trusting your employees and coming back to the how do you recruit the right people in the first place? And how do you keep the people that you want around you? So you might have a team of 20 around you, and 15 of them might be able to change with you. So how do you, the person you, change them and bring them with you? And the only way to do that is to lead by example. Mm-hmm. And if you lead by example and you prove to them that this journey over this rickety bridge of change, where you don't really know where you're going and you know where you're hoping to go, but you don't know the end destination exactly. If you put your foot down first and prove that it's stable, then your team have got some sense of safety to follow you. And I think that's the leadership revolution. It's the understanding that to be a leader is an ebb and flow of leadership. So sometimes you will lead and sometimes you will follow. And being comfortable in being that within the workplace, because you ideally have surrounded yourself by people who are experts in different areas. So if your finance expert says, okay, we need to go this direction, even if you're the chief exec and therefore should be leading them, the best thing you can do is follow, because that's why you hired them, is because they know more than you in finance. Or the marketing person says, okay, no, we really need to go this way, and you don't like it, but you're not your target audience. Your job is to question and to challenge and to make sure that your expert has thought it through. But then your job is to follow your expert, because why are you paying them if you're not going to follow their advice?
Exactly. Basically, if you're hiring people and still doing everything, you know, by yourself, yep, or, you know, the way you want, then you don't need the people.
No.
Or you just need drones. I was having a picture when you said leading by example and first testing out the ground of people pushing employees over the cliff, yep, you know, just to see if they're going to drop in the water or on the rocks. Yep. So, but yeah, you should jump yourself first.
You should jump yourself.
And then see if somebody
ideally
will follow.
You'll have spoken to your geologist and your like map maker. You'll have spoken to your local rock climber who you've employed to hire their expertise. So you're making an informed jump. But once you've got all that information, it's your job to go first, because that is why you were paid more than the other people.
Yeah.
So it's that vulnerability and understanding your real role as a leader, and actually where the workplace, the bigger workplace, and startups run the risk of setting up that workplace is failing, is where you don't have that trust amongst your employees.
Yeah, I actually think that bigger vulnerability is about accepting people's expertise, even when you don't like it.
Yeah.
So for example, if your marketing guy comes and say, we need to do this, and you know, it goes everything, but it feels bad, you don't like it, but you don't have any better idea, or your better idea has already shown to be bad. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to trust him. You need to go down that route and be vulnerable in that sense to have faith in your guy that, you know, you hired to even try to test it out, because later on, nobody will come and say any ideas to you.
Yeah. Because you haven't tested it.
And in the end, you won't have a team.
Yeah.
The thing that we talked about.
And I think my version of a leadership revolution, my version of being more you at work, is understanding where you don't like it because you don't understand it, and you don't like it because it makes your gut hurt and it goes against everything that you physically are, and understanding that difference. Because if you don't like it because you don't like it, you can argue stuff and you can ask to understand stuff better. If you don't like it because it questions your integrity, that's a different set of questions and challenges you need to be posing to your expert. If you still don't have a better idea and don't like it in both of those camps, then actually what you need to do is put more regular and quicker controls in place. Mm-hmm. So, okay, we're going to go down this marketing expert's journey, but in 3 months' time, I want to know this. This is our test. So you have clearer success measures, yeah, and clearer stop points. Where people often fail is when they don't know when to stop. And that's the whole point of testing. You test.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, crap,
and
this
they
doesn't
don't
work.
Know what to measure.
No.
In that sense. So what are the KPIs? Is it just sales? Is it, you know, leads? Is it, you know, website visitors? Is it conversions?
And it can't just be quantitative. So it can't just be sales or money or bottom line. And actually, this is where the whole user experience, employee experience, customer satisfaction, all of those, the stuff that explains your icky feeling in your stomach. How do we measure that? That's very difficult to measure, but you can sure as hell ask people. You can tap in, you can take a temperature check on your own feeling. One of the best things one of my best friends got me to do when I was about to quit my life was, so the question I was answering, or the thing I said was, I am going to quit my job on Tuesday. Fine. And over the weekend, she put a post-it note on the fridge for me. And split it in half. And on one side, there was a smiley face. On the other side, there was a sad face. And every time I thought the thought, I'm going to quit my job on Tuesday, I had to make a little tally of whether it made me smile or whether it made me sad. And it was a totally just ad hoc idea, but it gave me some quantitative stuff for my gut feeling of emotions. So actually, it made me more happy than it made me sad by a substantial amount.
Yeah.
So, okay, I know intuitively that it's the right thing to do. I also have this sticky note that says it's the right thing to do. So I can believe my sticky note that I've just made up. Whatever help tricks you into believing your intuition, how do you put the controls in? How do you put the measures in? What is the real meaning of impact?
Cool. Well, with this, we're going to finish up the podcast. Okay. And thank you for everybody for tuning in. Samantha, thank you very much for being my guest
on the show. Thank you for inviting me.
And we hope you like the visit and that you will come again.
Yes, thank you very much for having me.
Guys, thank you very much for tuning in. I'll see you on the next episode of the Backwater Entrepreneur.